prayers, and devotionals. Download your EWTN app today. Go to EWTNapps.com. You're listening to The Church Alive on EWTN Radio, the Global Catholic Radio Network. Deacon Harold Burke Sivers is very familiar to all of us. He is the co-host of Morning Glory on EWTN Radio. We often see him on EWTN television. He's a permanent deacon with Immaculate Heart of Mary Parish in Portland, Oregon. Deacon Harold, it's good to have you with us on The Church Alive. Thanks for taking the time to be with us.
It's great to be with you. Thank you for having me.
You are an African-American leader, not only in the church, but in our nation. I'm sure that this has been a very challenging and difficult week for you and for others.
Yes. You know, you think you make so much progress, you know, that we've come so far, and then you have incidents like this with George Floyd, and lets us know that there's still a lot of work to do.
Deacon, this is Father Petrie. It's always good to talk with you. What exactly was the issue? Why were they pinning George Floyd down that way, which seemed to me to be excessive, just looking at the video? What was going on?
From 2002 to 2008, I served on the board of the Department of Public Safety Standards and Training for the state of Oregon. It's a governor-appointed position where I helped to oversee the training for police officers. So I am intimately familiar with the training of police officers and their techniques. In fact, I myself worked 23 years in law enforcement public safety, and I personally have had to go what we call hands-on with people. I've had to put people on the ground. I've had to use techniques to restrain people until we can secure them. And then once they're secured, it's done. There is no agency anywhere that ever teaches you put your knee on someone's neck. When I saw that, I was appalled. I was shocked. He was secured. He wasn't fighting. He was already cuffed. There's no reason to put any more restraint type of techniques on him at that point. He should have been sitting in the back of the car until they forgot what to do with him. So there's something else going on there. And the fact that the other officers saw that and did nothing to stop it. Besides, you just can't say it's just an improper use of a police technique. It's not an improper use because that's not a use at all. There's something deeper going on here, and I think that's where it gets to the race issue.
I'm really happy to hear of your expertise in this because I've never seen a takedown like that, you know, any sort of techniques being used that way in any other situation. It's important to understand that this was not a police technique that he was trained.
That's correct. And what I don't understand is I saw the video before. They were talking to him. He wasn't in cuffs. He wasn't fighting, wasn't running, wasn't arguing. Then they put him in cuffs, sat him down, walked him across the street, and there was no problem. And all of a sudden, now he's on the ground. There's a series of officers looking like they're trying to restrain him. And then the one officer with the knee on the neck. I just don't understand the whole sequence of events there. Sometimes people take their prejudice and sometimes the stereotypes they have about people, and it makes their way into, it's not just what they do. It becomes part of who they are. And so I think we're seeing a lot of the anger and the rage. Some of it, I mean, it is justified, but we have to make a distinction between the protests and the marches, which are great. And some of them are civilly disobedient. And here's what I mean by that. The governors have, in many states, have still said, oh, you can't gather in large groups because of COVID-19. But they're breaking that because they're gathering in these large groups. Some groups are thousands. Like in Portland, we had a couple thousand people over the past couple days, peacefully protesting, making their voices heard. There's no problem with that, even though they're violating the governor's directive about COVID-19, but people are still wearing masks and all that. What is not acceptable is the people who are looting and vandalizing and destroying property and hurting people. That is ridiculous. And you know how they try to justify it? I saw this the other day. Someone said violence is not a way to show displeasure of what's going on. And then they have Jesus overturning the tables in a temple to back up their point that, you know, even Jesus used violence to make his point. Whoa! Talk about twisting and distorting the scriptures.
Well, to that point, Deacon, then, what is the road forward for the country, in your view?
Here's the thing. Racism is a learned behavior. When you see kids playing together, you don't see them, you know, they don't care what color they are, what race they are, whatever. They're just kids playing. So racism is learned. And so what we have to do is unlearn it. So how do you learn it? First of all, I mean, just innocent things like jokes, television, movies, where certain people of certain races are portrayed in particular ways. And those ways perpetuate stereotypes. And those stereotypes make their way into our thinking, the way we act, and our ideology. So what we have to do is to change that. And I think the first thing we need to do is start seeing people made in the image and likeness of God. On page 1 of the Bible, Genesis 1, verse 26 and 27, says, the Lord made man in his own image, in the image of God. He created him, male and female, he created them. So we have to start seeing people with the image and likeness of God. Instead of seeing a color, instead of seeing a stereotype in front of us, we have to see a brother or a sister that's made in God's image and likeness. And someone who did that wonderfully was St. Teresa of Calcutta, working with the poorest of the poor, people who are literally dying in the streets of Calcutta. And when she saw that person, she saw Jesus. You know, another one is Father Augustus Tolton, who put up with tremendous racism during his time, but still stayed Catholic and ended up becoming a priest, and even stayed after that when the priests and the bishops didn't want to have much to do with him. But he stayed. He stayed in the church and was a witness and example of today of how we can respond to what's going on in our culture.
Deacon Harold, how can I, as a Catholic in the pew, someone who truly cares that we are brothers and sisters in Christ, how can I affect change? What can I do that would make a difference at this time?
I would think about it in terms of the parable of the Good Samaritan, because the Samaritans and the Jews were related, but although the Samaritans were considered outcasts and heretics by the Jewish people. And so when Jesus tells this parable, you know, the priest goes by, the Levite goes by, this guy's lying at the side of the road, dying. No one makes any really cares about him. And here's the thing, and I'm thinking to myself that at least they could have called the authorities, they could have called someone else to help him. They didn't even do that. And a Samaritan walks by, sees this Jewish person who he's supposed to have nothing to do with on the side of the road, picks him up, cares for him, takes him to the inn, pays for his expenses. I'll take care of the rest of the bill when I come back. And so what I would say to our brothers and sisters of European descent, be the Samaritan. When something like this is going on, don't just sit back and, well, that's their problem. It has nothing to do with me. That would be the equivalent, in my mind, of when during the time of slavery, and you're walking down the street and on the auction block, you see a family that's being ripped apart. One slave owner is taking the kids. One slave owner is taking the mom. One slave owner is taking the dad. And you walk by, you cover your kids' eyes. Don't look, kids. Don't look. Oh, you don't say anything. You don't do anything. You know, we have to stand in solidarity. Again, we have to see all of us as being made in the image and likeness of God. We have to see Jesus Christ standing in the other person. And it's the Eucharist that helps bring all that together. When we receive the Eucharist, we come one in the body of Christ, then our job is to leave that church and be Eucharist to the world. We have to be the hands and the heart of Jesus in the world today. It's the Eucharist that helps us to do that. Take that Eucharist and go out and say, let me be the effective force for change in the world.
One of the things I run into sometimes in talking about this with other folks, and I think it's a smokescreen. I think it's sort of a deflection, because there are a lot of issues tied up with, as you said, there's something deeper. It's racism that's tied up with what's happened to George Floyd, what's happened to so many other people of color and minorities with police discrimination. The question is this that I often get, is that the African-American community has its own internal problems that seem to precipitate this. For example, the lack of fatherhood, you know, in many families. How do you respond to that? How would you help me to respond to that when I'm talking to folks who want to sort of deflect to looking at the internal difficulties in the African-American community?
I cover that in my book on Father Tolton. In the end, it doesn't matter what anybody's background was. Because I see some people even maligning Mr. Floyd by saying, well, he had this kind of background and he was this. Everybody's saying he was a good guy. But so what? It doesn't matter. What matters is treating people with the dignity and respect that they deserve as a child of God. Now, when I speak with members of the black community about these issues, the way I say it is like this. Imagine you go in for a job interview. You're not going to wear a T-shirt and sweatpants. I mean, if you're qualified, that's great, but you still have to make an impression when you walk through that door, because you're going to be representing this company and what they stand for. I said, if people want to start perceiving us differently, then we need to take a look internally at ourselves. How are we presenting ourselves to the culture? If we want to make an impression, then we have to do some things internally. And I would say number one is to start building strong families again. Start building strong families. I mean, one of the things that happened in the postbellum era, black families tried to reunite. They tried to find their lost husbands and wives and children and reunite as a family. You know, one of the things that inspired me, because my parents are divorced, they had a tumultuous marriage, but growing up, one of the things that gave me hope was the show Good Times. You know, here's a poor black family that lives in the projects in Chicago, and no matter what happened, they stayed together. And they went through some very difficult times, but they stayed together no matter what. And so when you look at the situation, 70% of fatherlessness, you know, of children born out of wedlock, the majority of young men in prison that are black or minorities have no father in the home. When you see things like that, there's things that we can also do that we need to challenge ourselves. Now, again, that doesn't take away from the fact that, you know, we need to deal with racism, you know, from the outside. But I think part of it is we also need to represent ourselves in society and in culture by looking internally as well.
What is your message to the protesters, and what is your message to the police?
Well, here's the thing. You know, having worked in law enforcement for 23 years and having been part of an agency that's trained police officers, the vast majority of police officers are doing a fantastic job. Many of them are just as sickened as I am. I talked to many of my colleagues, my former colleagues, and they're just as upset because that portrays all of them in a negative light, too. And we have to be careful when we throw around terms like institutional racism. There's personal sin. To say the police are racist, no. The police aren't racist. There are certain individuals that work for the police that have racist ideology and things like that. But to say the whole thing is racist, that would be saying, like, the church purports child molestation. No, it doesn't. There are certain clerics within the church that do that. But to say that the whole church is ridiculous. So we have to be careful throwing around terms like institutional racism. And we have to focus on the fact that we're individuals that are part of institutions, and there are individuals who are particularly sinful, and we have to call those things out for what they are.
Let's wrap up this conversation by talking about what really needs to happen, not just theoretically, but right now. What do we need to do to move forward and move through this and get to a better place in our country with race relations and just love between brothers and sisters?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, we have to start really loving. I mean, I don't think we're loving each other deeply enough. You know, the kind of love that we propose as Catholics and as followers of Jesus Christ is covenant love. It's not the love of the culture that's about self-gratification and about what I can get for myself. It's a love that gives itself away. It's when you give yourself away in love that you truly find yourself in God. And we have to learn to love more deeply, more intimately. And I can't think of a better way to do that than to have. And I think that this is happening at also the same time with COVID-19, where many people have been away from the Mass for so long. So I think this is the opportunity for a Eucharistic renaissance. You know, when now that people are coming back to Mass to really appreciate the depth and the presence of Christ in that Eucharist. And so I think there's a wonderful parallel here. As we begin to have more deeper appreciation for Christ present in Eucharist in the Mass, we can have a better recognition of Christ's presence in that other person standing in front of us. So I think there's a wonderful parallel here. But again, bishops have been issuing statements since the 1950s about race. You know, and we see things, these incidents happen in 2015, in 2017, and now 2019, 2020. People get angry for a while, then things calm down, and then another thing happens, but we're not dealing with the real issue. So I think, you know, an openness to have some serious dialogue. And I think the big thing, there's no leader. There's no moral leader that people can turn toward, like a Martin Luther King. I mean, he's one of a kind. But there's no Martin Luther King-esque type of moral leader in our country that people can be like a magnet that they're drawn to. Like, yes, that's the voice we need to hear. This is the person that can lead us to take this whole discussion to the next level, to really have systemic, deep change. There's no one like that. So in that void, we're seeing a lot of disunity. So I think there needs to be a unifying person. And until that person comes, we need to focus that person being Jesus Christ.
Well, that's a great person to go to, and we can all be leaders in our own communities, and certainly you are one of those leaders. Deacon Harold Burke Sivers, we appreciate you being with us and look forward to hearing you more on